Hi, I'm Nora Mehreen. Currently, I work for the United Nations Development Program here in New York. Originally from Bangladesh, I moved to the United States about 2.5 years back. Since then, I've been working here. Today, I'm with Anuj and Deepika in the podcast At the End of the Day.
Nora, thank you so much for being in the podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you're just a new mother, new mom. You just had a baby. Congratulations on that as well.
Thank you so much. It means so much.
How does it feel to be a mother?
It's a beautiful, beautiful madness. A lot of it is so unpredictable, and of course, you're experiencing everything. It's first for everything that the baby does. Mm-hmm. Very unpredictable, but I wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world. So right. It's been a beautiful couple of months. Every morning I would give the baby, we named him Izan, mm-hmm. so I would just give Izan to my mom and catch up on some sleep. Mm-hmm. It wasn't ideal, I wasn't getting my 7 to 8 hours sleep, which I usually am very strict about. Like, I right. like to get my hours of sleep, mm-hmm. but things are better now.
What does Izan mean?
Well, we got it out of the Quran in the Quranic context, it means someone who follows. Izan means someone who's obedient to Allah and the Prophet.
In the introduction, you said that you have been here for nearly 2.5 years in the US, and still you're already in the UN job. How did you crack that job?
Mm-hmm. I actually moved here with the job.
Okay.
So after my graduate studies, I studied in London. Mm-hmm. I went back to Bangladesh. It's actually a pretty funny story. Uh-huh. It just happened mm-hmm. to be so that I was visiting Mabrur here in New York, and I just thought of taking the opportunity to meet a few people from my university, a few of my alumni, to see what they're doing. And the university I went to, I was their 101st batch, okay. which meant like we had a lot of alumni who were already in New York or mm-hmm. in the United States. So I was hunting people on LinkedIn, actually. Mm-hmm. Happened to bump into a few who were with UNDP who had done the same program as me. Mm-hmm. So I had a target. At that point, I was already job hunting, and mm-hmm. my target was to reach out to as many people as I could. But of course, after a while, I realized just blankly doing it didn't make sense. There had to be a common connection. And I settled for either the Bangladeshi connection mm-hmm. or the second was an alum of the universities I've been to.
Okay.
And I ended up writing to a person who's a very good friend of mine and a colleague at mm-hmm. this point. And I wanted to meet him for coffee, to just hear about the work he does. And to be very honest, UNDP is a huge idea. I had very little idea of what this department does.
Right.
Was very lucky to meet him. We had coffee, we had a chat about what he does. So he was doing policy work at UNDP at that point. And we kept in touch. I had already gone back to Bangladesh. This one morning I woke up and I got a WhatsApp message for him saying his team would be recruiting. He said, if you're still interested, look at the open positions. Mm. So that's how I ended up applying for the job and eventually making it here. So it was a bit of coincidence, but I guess for me the lesson from this was you really don't know who will be able to help you.
Nice.
But I think what's important is asking for help is always very difficult. And this is something Deepika and I have chatted about. It's very difficult. Sometimes it affects your sense of self-respect. It's you don't want to go and annoy people.
True.
But at the same time, there are a lot of people out there who like to mentor young mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. There's this mentorship angle in a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think it's useful to find a common connection and reach out to people mm-hmm. and just to even invest in like a coffee for an hour with a person. Even if you don't end up getting that job, you build a connection, and that's always good. For me, that's how I think my move to New York fortunately has mm-hmm. been quite easy.
Mm-hmm.
I have bumped into people where it required months of searching for a job.
Right.
It wasn't always because they didn't have the right skill set. It was probably that the matchup didn't happen.
Right,
like they
right.
probably had aspirational roles that they wanted, and some people are very strict about it. Like
right.
they would only move to a job because that's what they want to do.
Right.
For me, I think it was a coincidence. It happened to work out, and I've moved here for the job, and I've been at it for almost 2 years now.
You were reaching out to your friends or people who you know on LinkedIn just like that before you went reach out to your friend for a cup of coffee? Help me understand that.
So no, these people were not even my friends. So these are people I didn't know.
You just reached out to them on
LinkedIn? Yeah, I was just looking at LinkedIn. Okay. Has this very useful feature where you can put in your university name and then you can pick the city.
Right.
So then it was showing me from SOAS, like SOAS alums in New York.
Okay.
I got an entire list, and then I was filtering that down to the United Nations, because from the time I studied economics, I think every person who ends up studying economics, if you ask them, I think a great majority would tell you they want to end up at the World Bank or the United Nations. It's just something that that they're taught to do.
Right.
It is that aspirational job that people want.
Right.
So for me in particular, that's why I use the filter of looking at who are some SOAS alums who are working for UNDP.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then when I went into their background, I did do a bit of research. I wanted to look at people who did the same degree as me, because it didn't make sense, for example, to talk to someone who's in legal aid, because I have no background in legal aid.
Right.
Or to talk to a statistician, because I don't really have a common connection.
Right.
So I think for me that worked out pretty well, because we could talk about life at SOAS and then how the degree translated into the job that they're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
So we still had a common connection. So I think networking it shouldn't be done that blankly as well.
Right.
Because you shouldn't be wasting someone else's time.
Right.
So I think just finding a common connection, finding similar interests would be useful. Because I did have a few other people that I met, and then there was no common connection.
Right.
So those chats didn't
work out.
Didn't work at all.
But how do you reach out to the stranger when you find a common thread? You know?
Oh, I would just send that person, like when you want to connect with someone on LinkedIn, you can add
send
a note.
Message. Yeah, something
yeah.
like that.
So I would just say reaching out as a fellow like SOAS alum, would love to chat about and get to know further on your job.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
And I'm sure there has been instances where you haven't heard back from them.
Oh, for the most part, people don't reply.
Right. Yeah.
Some people reply.
Right.
What I've found is people closer to my age, I don't know if it was just a coincidence, but people who were closer to my age ended up responding more.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It could be that senior managers, I'm sure, are so overwhelmed with their workload, and they probably get, I don't know, 50, on an average, of 50 plus emails within a couple of days. So they probably are not as
responsive
or like as regular on LinkedIn.
Right.
So there's an entire generation who's missing out on LinkedIn as well.
Right.
So I think it's more so people who are in their late 20s, 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's been my experience, that they've been very responsive on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
There is a special line on a LinkedIn profile. I really like that line. If I have to read that, you have said, years down the line, I wish to have the skills essential to become a seasoned development practitioner. What do you mean by that?
First, I'll give you a bit of context.
Okay.
Without naming any organization or any person in particular. What has made me, and I think it's also because I went to a very leftist school for my graduate studies, where the ways of the IMF, the ways of the World Bank, the United Nations is heavily criticized. They're not coming from a position where they're not saying we should do away with these organizations altogether. What they're saying is the world needs to be in a position where we still have development practitioners who are questioning the ways of this organization.
Mm-hmm.
Are they actually serving the mission with which they were established in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the first time, SOAS instilled that kind of a thinking in me, to be able to question, like, the research that comes out of a reputed research organization, should we just take the word for it, or should we really dig down and be able to see that, is this some PR piece that we're reading, or is this the truth?
Yes.
Right.
Again, I don't want to name anyone, but I was born and brought up in Bangladesh. 24 years of my life was spent in Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding of poverty, and this is with all due respect to anyone who's grown up in the West, I do not mean to negatively, like, to discriminate against that person, but I think my understanding, my perspectives of poverty would be very different from someone who reads about poverty from the textbook.
Yeah.
I've sat in classrooms where people thought they understand child labor issues. They think they understand by looking at books.
Yeah.
Bangladesh is one of those countries where our ready-made garments industry is heavily criticized for having very, very poor labor standards.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think it's dangerous to have people who've never been in those contexts,
mm-hmm.
haven't worked in those contexts, haven't really seen it for what it is. Like, I've even met a lot of people who are studying development economics, who want a career in development, but they also say the poverty in the Indian subcontinent is too daunting for them. Like, it's a lot for me to take in.
Oh.
For me, comments like those initially would make me very angry.
Mm.
But then these were also people who were very close friends.
Mm.
So I was like, I really need to get to the root of this. It was also because it's a culture shock.
Right.
If you've grown up in Germany, for example,
mm.
you've just have had a more set way of life. You don't think that you should always have electricity, for example. You should always have water. Things should work a certain way.
Yeah.
Trains shouldn't be delayed by more than a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you grow up where I come from,
mm-hmm.
The system fails more often than not.
Yeah.
But there's a way to work around the system, and that's
mm-hmm.
how resilience is. Our definition of resilience is probably a lot more different from someone who's come from a more privileged background, and that's how I would put it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put down that line, I guess what I wanted to mean is it makes me angry to see people who are coming from, and I've seen it a great deal in Bangladesh, you have foreign nationals coming and advising your government
mm-hmm.
on
yeah.
national development frameworks
right.
and poverty alleviation frameworks.
Yes.
But do you really understand poverty?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Have you lived through poverty?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for me, if I have to break everything down to one unit, and if I ask myself, what is it that I want to do, I would be much more comfortable going down to South Asia and working. If I had to be a policy advocate, if I have to advocate for something, if I have to start something new, I think that's a region I would go back to, because that's a region I know and I understand. And I would be a lot more cautious if I was placed, for example, in Africa,
mm-hmm.
in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
I have to be a lot more careful because I don't speak the language. I don't get the culture. I haven't lived through it.
Right.
And I guess it's very important that especially graduate schools that produce a lot of development practitioners,
mm-hmm.
really, they're able to give this message to their graduates, is that there's nothing wrong about being a German national and wanting to work in Bangladesh. There's absolutely nothing wrong about
right.
it. In fact, for people who do that, I have a great deal of respect for that. But I think it also should come with a word of caution,
mm-hmm.
that you need to start from ground zero. You
yeah.
need to hear to your stakeholders. You need to be close to the communities you want to work for. I cannot say I want to work for a refugee camp, but then I'm too scared of my safety,
yes.
right.
of health issues,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
and not want to travel there.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why I put it there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now we have come to almost at the end of the podcast. If anybody, you know, wants to pursue the career you are pursuing right now, what advice do you want to give out to them?
Anyone who wants to be a development practitioner needs to go down from headquarters to the country levels.
Right.
You absolutely need to be on the fields.
Do the legwork.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Right.
I think, yeah, that's my
mm-hmm.
advice.
Yeah, that note reminds me of the interview we did of Mr. Kulchandra Gautam,
yeah.
the former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. And this was his piece of advice. If you want to make a career in international development, you have to go out there in the field
mm-hmm.
and gain that experience, work with them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Nora. And yes, if anybody wants to reach out to you for professional guidance, what would be the best way to reach you?
I think LinkedIn.
Okay.
LinkedIn.
Let's
mm-hmm.
go by LinkedIn.
Okay. So we will tag Nora's LinkedIn link down below in the description. Thank you so much, Nora, for your time. Thank you. That was a very inspiring conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time and for this initiative. I think it's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And yeah, do subscribe to our channel, podcast at the end of the day on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, all the platforms you find us. And do log into our website, podcast@theendoftheday.com.
Yes. And we would like to thank the English Speaking Union, Andrew Roman New Immigrant Center, ESU, Arnick for providing us this space. And if you are a new immigrant in the US, Arnik provides free English language classes and professional development classes. So get in touch with Arnik as well. So on that note, it's time to say bye-bye and we will catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, a quick note. If you have a personal story that you think might be helpful to the newly arriving immigrants in the US, please contact us. We would love to feature you in our podcast. Go to our website, podcast@theendoftheday.com, and write to us by going to the feedback section.
And by the way, if you love this podcast, you can support us with a small donation. Your help will enable us to continue producing more episodes. The link to support our podcast is in the description below.